Well, what's up, guys? It's August 26th, 2018. This is Fancy Ramen, episode 81. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
And this is a podcast that's almost always about video games, but this episode, we're going to go back to what really matters. Anime.
Squirrels. Oh, okay.
Squirrels? Yeah, okay. Squirrels are fine, too. Whatever.
I've got a squirrel story.
Well, start
go ahead.
There.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. I'll get this out of the way. So I saved the life of 3 infant squirrels this past week, and I am still like riding on my high horse after it. For 24 hours, Sierra and I encountered some squirrels that felt that their nest fell out of the tree that they were nested in, and the mother came and only picked up 1 of the 4 from the litter. And so we had to take 3 baby squirrels who had yet to form hair, whose eyes had yet to open, whose whiskers were just growing, no teeth, ears still fused to the sides of their heads, and take care of them for 24 hours before we could hand them off to a squirrel rehabilitationist. And so while I was a squirrel daddy for 24 hours, I essentially was on a round-the-clock regimen of keeping them warm on a heating blanket, checking their like vitals to make sure that they were doing okay, and then feeding them a like sugar-saturated Pedialyte solution through a warmed syringe to imitate essentially feeding them like a mama squirrel. And I got these squirrels through the night, waking up every hour to make sure that my little squirrel babies made it through. And now I'm a hero.
So how would you feel if you knew that the wildlife rescue just euthanized them as soon as they came in?
I would feel so shitty. I would feel so, so bad. And I do believe that like wildlife rescue actually does have pretty much a low to no priority for creatures
squirrels.
Like squirrels and whatnot, because the person that we... What's wrong with your eyes, Neil?
I don't know. I was just messing around with my eyebrows.
Yeah.
good for the audio listeners.
You're
saying that they're low priority, because obviously they're not endangered or anything.
Yeah, exactly. They're super low priority, and so I'm sure if we... I actually don't think they accept them is the thing. So unless it's an issue in which they like absolutely have to get involved for some other sort of like reason as far as health or safety or whatnot, they essentially are like, you're on your own with these squirrels. So we ended up handing them off to someone who does it in their free time, like takes care of squirrels and rehabilitates them until they can be released back into the wild. So we essentially saved our squirrels for a squirrel savior hobbyist, and you know, crossed our fingers that they were in better hands.
Did you vet this person beforehand? Did they happen to have like a truck stop restaurant?
I left it up to Sierra. She got to call most of the shots. I was busy on like squirrel triage for most of the day and evening.
Okay.
But it was a whirlwind of a time. But nothing makes you feel better than getting your small squirrel children through a single night.
I'll take your word for that.
Yeah. I've got pictures I'll send you guys. I only took one, and Sierra asked why I didn't take more pictures, and I said I didn't want to violate the privacy of my squirrels. And I didn't realize how like insane that sounded until she brought it up to me. But I've at least got baby photos to remember them by. It honestly feels like, I don't know, is this how mothers feel when their children get adopted? Like they put them up for adoption because they just can't feed them on the hour, every hour, and they're also not the right species. And their electric blanket also can only heat for 1 hour, and so they're worried their squirrels will get hypothermia and die. I mean babies, sorry, not squirrels.
So do you know where they're going to be released at?
No. We chose to relinquish our permission to contact our baby squirrels. So we just hope they're in a better place.
Rest in peace, baby squirrels.
So I'm curious, because if you had known, a lot of animals in the wilderness tend to actually have enough intelligence to actually identify humans. Like, if you were to feed pigeons over a period of time, you may actually find that the pigeons become, like, comfortable enough to fly to you or recognize you and will continue to fly to you for food and whatnot.
Yeah.
There's like a pack of squirrels outside of my place of work, and I have a few coworkers that feed them peanuts, so they actually will approach them when they go downstairs or go through that portion of the front lawn or whatever.
Hmm. Are you saying my squirrel babies are going to recognize me in the future?
Well, probably not now, because you don't know where they're going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they would anyway. I don't even think they could hear my voice. Like, I have never dealt with an animal in that stage of, like, infancy. And that was, like, it was also terrifying. It's terrifying trying to take care of a living thing, whether it's, like, just a little baby rodent or something more complex than that, because it's just, like, I don't understand what squirrel yips mean. If they wag their tails, it's like, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, because they're a squirrel and not a dog.
If they're spitting acid on you, you're not sure if it's a good thing.
Is that a happy acid thing, or is it an angry acid thing? Yeah.
So, as a whole, has this prepared you any more for fatherhood?
I mean, I think it's probably solidified that I'm not up for the task if it takes more than a couple hours out of my day. So, man, what an inconvenience. I feel like I've already raised, you know, my children. Like, I think I've done my part for the world.
Now, just watch in a couple years, the squirrels will come back asking for money.
That's when you know you really raised them right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was my Monday into Tuesday morning was being a squirrel daddy.
Well, I have something maybe just as touching to bring up as squirrels, baby squirrels. I hadn't really been keeping my eye on the current or even past two. I don't know how many seasons of anime we've gone through.
Two without talking about them at all.
Yeah.
And we haven't had like real deep discussion for three.
And probably for good reason, because I haven't watched any of it. But I was curious, and I remember thinking to myself that there were a few that looked interesting. So I was going through the list of like currently airing shows, and I saw one in particular that I had actually read a few chapters or read all of the chapters of, I should say, actually. No hiding this ridiculousness, called Backstreet Girls. Have you guys heard of this one before?
Not at all.
So, it's not very PC, is what I'm first going to say. So, that warning is out there. The premise is that there are three Yakuza guys, kind of like lower-level thugs, but still high enough that they have like direct contact or access to their boss. And they screw up royally somehow. They don't really get into details, but their boss is like, you know what? Instead of killing you, I'm going to send you guys to Thailand if you so choose. You can either die or go to Thailand and get sex changes and become idols. and the surgery is such an amazing success, I guess. They happen to make their debut as idols, and they look perfectly like women perfectly. So like, despite the fact that the three of them are like burly, hairy men to begin with, you have to suspend some concept of belief here that like this is actually realistic to have this ridiculous transformation, including changes in height and other things like that. Doesn't matter, it's a comedy. And so you have these three Yakuza guys that are still, you know, Yakuza at heart, being forced to become idols. and you have their boss, who is like a top head mobster guy, but actually secretly seems to love being like a manager or producer of idols. So through the course of like the several chapters, and I'm assuming episodes at this point, you get to see like this shitty ass Yakuza guy like punishing his three henchmen as they after they've transformed into idols, as well as see like the ridiculous side of him like shirking off his Yakuza mob business because he needs to focus more on writing lyrics and other stupid shit. It's pretty good. Again, not very PC, but hilarious nonetheless.
Can be found on no anime streaming service besides the legal ones.
Oh, yeah, seriously? What is it even on, then, I wonder?
I don't know. Like, Kick-Ass Anime, possibly? I tried to load something up, but nothing happened.
Yeah, I'm looking for it, too, and I haven't found
Maybe
videos
yet.
Maybe
it's just not accepted by Western audiences.
Daily Motion, possibly?
Like, it's easy enough for me to suspend, like, all of my... suspend like a lot of my like my morality checker balance here, because you know it is very like unapologetic, but like the three characters are very much still like guys at heart, but a lot of the course of the story deals with them starting to really fully accept becoming idols and starting to look at like the benefits of it, but there are still chapters where they're just like, shit, where's my dick?
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so where are you watching this?
I didn't watch any of it yet. I'm kind of scared to take the dive into the anime part. I've read everything off of like Manga Kakalot or some other quote unquote.
Good luck,
because
I can't find anything besides like just little clips here and there of like 2 minute clips.
MasterAnnie.may is probably one you can find of that. That's kind of been my go-to. Scott, are you appalled at what you see?
No, I'm trying to process all of it. I actually think it could be a very funny and fun concept if handled right. But I don't know. I'd have to watch an episode, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm gonna just come up and say it's not nearly as good as like. It's not even a fraction as good as like some of the shows I'd seen over the last year, like Hinamatsuri, Mob Psycho. But
Hinamatsuri was a killer. I'm so glad I watched that one. I enjoyed that a lot.
There's just not like a whole lot of good comedy shows that I've been able to find lately, or manga. So this is kind of filling
that void.
Definitely
stick with the word
but it doesn't
manga
have to
since you haven't
much.
Seen the show.
Sorry, what's
on
that?
Sorry, I was going to say definitely stick with the word manga since you haven't seen the show yet.
Right, exactly.
I'm gonna go out on. No, I don't need to go out on a limb. I know for a fact. I know absolutely 100% that at least in the comedy end, when you mentioned something like Mob Psycho, that got greenlit for a season two, and I think One Punch Man just got greenlit for a season two as well. So, I am excited to see those happen. I think both of those manga have. Probably their strongest narrative arcs and some of their best comedy in their second, like essentially whatever is part two of the manga. I don't know if either of them have really actually extended too far into their part three narratives, but I'm really excited to see these happen. I haven't read the manga in quite a while since the anime really came out, but those are going to be two really great comedies, at least coming up within the next year, I believe.
So when we talked about this last time, I had expressed a little bit of disappointment. And like I did want to explain it better, because at the time I was kind of like wishy-washy about why I was somewhat disappointed. And
typical
I think it's
Neil,
part,
being well, wishy and washy. Can't even decide if you want to be a wishy or a washy person, so you go for both.
Well, so I finished the Mob Psycho manga, and it's good. Like, it's kind of like One Punch Man, where I feel that for the majority of people, once you get through the first, like, quote-unquote season or the first couple arcs, you kind of know what it's going to be for the rest of the way. So it's not like it's doing anything revolutionary, if that makes sense. I think the only reason I'm kind of bummed that we're getting continuations, it's cool that we're getting continuations. I'll probably watch it at some point in time. But it's just that, like, it takes more time slots away from shows that could be completely original material. But I think the anime climate as a whole now is not one that you really ever want to have people making those types of gambles. Because, like, anime at this point is more or less just a selling force for manga and light novels. And, like, so yeah. Maybe my expectation of having original content is probably unfounded, but it was cool seeing a few of the shows over the last year that were not based on anything. It were just original stories. And I thought they might not have been the best shows or the best series on at that point in time, but they were, I don't know. It's new best content as opposed to revisited content.
Best shows like what? That haven't come from somebody who doesn't actually read manga or is interested in trying to read manga, because I don't feel like reading.
Cookie's all about them moving pictures.
Higgs, okay. Yeah.
Who can blame him? It's like 10 times faster than reading.
So I think my favorite... All right, this one's kind of a... what's the word I'm looking for? I think it had a story. It was based on something, but the Zodiac Age. Oh, I'm going to have to fact check myself.
You could just give a title.
Yeah.
That's what I have to look up, actually.
Oh.
This awesome anime I watched. Well, I don't know.
The show.
Don't remember the name, really. I will agree with Cookie, though, on the end that, like, anime is easier to watch, or anime is like an easier entertainment media, I think, than manga in general. I feel like there's more payout for invested time, and
it's just
like the density.
Easier to get to for me, because I don't feel like going on like all the random websites. I don't spend that much time on the computer.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I'm in the same camp where it's more convenient, and I may prefer the medium in general, just for storytelling.
Okay, to name off a few that I think you guys might be...
aware of?
Might be aware of, might have prior knowledge to. Gurren Lagann.
Amazing.
Samurai Champloo.
I thought we were talking about new anime.
Yeah,
no, right,
Samurai
right.
Champloo is early aughts.
They're good.
They are good. You haven't named one that I don't like yet.
Paranoia yes. Agent.
You're getting even older now.
One sec. Well, it's
this
because
boy,
the one
this
I thought
gonna
was...
say Cowboy Bebop.
The one, yeah, Cowboy Bebop would be on that list as well, of course. But the one I found, or that I thought was original, turned out to be a novel before. So I was like, fuck.
What was it?
It was Juni Taisen, which is basically a weird battle royale type anime where it follows
the Zodiac
story. Yeah.
Mm, okay.
But I thought it was actually pretty interesting because it was just like unlike anything else I had watched that season.
You're making me feel like I am... I'm so like anti Marvel, right? When it comes to like movies and how they get all of like just this huge backing of not only like money and financing, but also just like public and social time, because they take up so much space in the box office. Mm-hmm. And I realized that my love for shows like One Punch Man and Mob Psycho, which aren't maybe necessarily the exact like substitute for that Marvel setup, or the same thing if you're talking about you want new original ideas in. And I'm like, no, pump these things that I really like that are obviously like very approachable. And I don't know, it's I don't know if One Punch Man and Mob Psycho qualify as like really mainstream anime content. I feel like they're super approachable, and therefore I feel as though they're pretty mainstream.
They're very common ones to have people's that were on people's lists when they came out.
Yeah.
And hence why My Hero got such big praise, because they were like, oh yeah, My Hero and One Punch Man, same universe, sweet.
And, yeah, and I mean, I love that. I really enjoy that anime too. I was trying to tell somebody the other day, it's really hard for me to determine if I was just like roped in with the hype early enough to just now be stuck on the bandwagon. Like, I have some friends who they're that way about like One Piece. It's like, no, not going to get me there. You can miss me with that. But My Hero Academia wrote me in, and now I can't tell if it's a really good anime or I'm just like emotionally invested to the point where I have to stay till the end. Just like Dragon Ball Z or that was Naruto for Cookie.
No, I watched all of Dragon Ball Z, Naruto, One Piece, Bleach.
Okay.
I did them all. So, since we're talking about anime, me and Lizzie actually went to go out into Bellevue, the Bellevue Theater, to see a movie called The Night is Short, Walk On Girl. It is a... it's a weird one. Let me think about who actually makes it.
I have seen a preview of this. Looks pretty good.
Oh my goodness, it's wonderful. Like, it's pretty much about this chick who's always walking forward, always looking to do like the next fun thing. It starts off with her in the beginning of the night saying, all right, I want to go get a drink. And she's just like a really good drinker. Like throughout the entire, like the night's broken down into like 3 to 4 quarters. Actually, I guess I'll say 4 quarters. Starts off with her drinking and meeting a bunch of random characters. And those characters, there ends up being like a drinking contest that she wins. And then she decides that she gets hooked on a book and meets like the master, the god of used books. And there's a love interest who's trying to like get with her, but he's too embarrassed to like actually talk with her. And he doesn't have pants for like 90% of the movie.
Just randomly. Donald Duck?
Basically. And so she ends up at like this used book fair. It's got like a very quaint and artistic animation style that I really liked. After the books, then there was like this thing where there was this renegade play going on where one of the main characters was named like Monte Cristo. And they just have these like pop-up shows that were illegally done. And then after that like little arc of the random pop-up play musical thing, they'd set up like a big stage in like 2 seconds, do like a singing scene, embarrass somebody, then tear down and run away from the cops. Then after that play ended, which was super weird, then everyone starts getting sick and then she's got to go do other things. But like it's a very lovely movie. I would suggest if you ever get a chance to see it, go ahead and watch it. It's quaint and enjoyable. Once again, called The Night is Short, Walk On Girl.
Did you happen to see the movie called Fireworks?
I did not.
It's made by the same director / company, maybe. Publisher, for sure, but as Your Name. And it aired, I think, around the 4th of July, but it's apparently like a Groundhog's Day type of movie, repeated day, so on. It seems like that particular director, writer, seems to have a thing with like time travel sort of stories. But no, I was just curious because that's also on my short list of movies to watch. But yeah, I'll have to take a look at this.
I'm definitely going to add that to my list. And things I'm watching this season, Hanibato is a sports anime about badminton. Black Lagoon, all about the guns. and oh god, I think it's called like Receiving, which is an anime about beach volleyball.
Wait, have you watched Grand Blue yet?
No.
What's Grand Blue?
You should.
Is it also volleyball?
No, but when you said volleyball, it reminded me of, well, the beach. And Grand Blue is an anime kind of about diving. But more appropriately, it follows the protagonist. Actually, sorry, before I begin, do you want to talk about any of those in depth?
Nah, Grand Blue Fantasy?
No, just Grand Blue. It's another, like, probably not PC anime.
Also not on any streaming service.
Man, what Neil bringing the obscure really? Hits.
I know, right?
So that's strange, because it's definitely a current running show. Grand Blue is kind of, it's definitely on the male side of things, I'll say. It follows this protagonist that is moving in with relatives for college, like an aunt or uncle or something. And he, like their house happens to be a diving shop. So he ends up getting roped in as a result of very pushy upperclassmen at his college into this diving club. And it's all these shenanigans. But there's just a really wild cast of characters. His more or less his best friend turns out to be like an otaku, like strong, hard, crazy ass otaku. And just the antics of this kind of normal guy that ends up becoming a super heavy ass drinker with the otaku, and they both end up with like a bunch of burly ass muscular men in this diving club. It's just like a bunch of weird fun shit that is probably offensive to a lot of people.
Oh, it's not out. Wait.
No, it's totally out. I think they have 20 episodes out.
Adaptation kicks off July 13th. It's like it was announced on Crunchyroll, but it's not on Crunchyroll.
Well, a maybe not so reputable site would probably have it.
Which means I'll probably never see it either.
Yeah, according to this, it currently has 12 episodes out. Wait, excuse me, 7 episodes out. But again, it's not one I would ever want to take life lessons from. That's probably the best way to put it.
Who takes life lessons from anime besides My Little Pony Friendship is Magic?
Yeah.
That one's got the best life lessons. That and Steven Universe.
Yeah.
I know they're technically both not animes, but so what? Fight me.
Oh, you know what I just realized?
The cookie was a brony?
Hope
cookie
not.
Is a brony. But
I think man. That's already been established. Oh, Neil, something you might be interested in. Anime that I am trying, that's on my list of things to watch. Mr. Tonegawa, Middle Management Blues.
Oh, I've okay. This has caught my eye as well.
It says an executive at the Taiya Group, Tonegawa Yukio, is ordered by the company president Hayato to plan out death games for debtors. Awaiting Tonegawa at these planning meetings are ordeals, agony, and despair. The demonic spinoff about the anguish inflicted on Tonegawa by the president and company suits is now getting an anime adaptation.
Yeah, it's the Kaiji side story. If it's what I think it is. I've already expressed like my disinterest in Kaiji. I occasionally jump on that manga when it updates.
What's Kaiji?
Kaiji is a gambling manga / anime. And it usually features like non-typical gambling games. Like the first arc is about rock, paper, scissors with cards. And it like the whole.
Oh, yeah. This is a Kaiji spinoff.
Yeah.
Just based on the eyes in the background of this first, what you call it. Yep, that is literally a Kaiji spinoff, as I see both characters from the middle management thing.
There's just a literal shit ton of narrative explanation going on in like the most Japanese anime way possible. Like, you know how people meme that Japanese anime is all about like some character serving as the like explanation person, like in like Dragon Ball, Naruto, or probably even more appropriately Yu-Gi-Oh.
Where, what was the gambling anime that you watched?
Kaiji, that's what it's called.
Oh, that was what it is. Okay.
Yeah, where
there you go.
I'm assuming it's probably just the same thing. I mean, I'm sure this is probably going to be better because instead of having like a character that continually finds himself getting into gambling problems and despite all of these horrible things happening, continues to gamble because he has a fucking problem. It's like watching an anime about an alcoholic, but they glorify being an alcoholic.
What?
Which like, I know I'm totally a hypocrite because I seem to be choosy about what vices are good to watch and what vices are bad to watch, but like, it's extremely depressing watching Kaiji for me. Like, there are so many opportunities where the guy has so much fucking money and it's just like, all right, time to stop gambling. Stop. You could live a luxurious lifestyle now. Stop. But yeah, I'm a glutton for punishment at the same time. But yeah, instead of it being about the guy with the gambling problem, it's the guy perpetrating the gambling problem. So maybe that'd be interesting, but I definitely don't like the narrative, like the heavy use of narrative explanation everywhere.
Fair play.
It might be your cup of tea though. I mean, don't listen to me for my opinions.
It's still on my list. It's not high on my list of things to watch, but it's still on my list. Tell you what's high on my list of things to watch, A Centaur's Life. That's high on my list.
Is it going to be like a slice of life with a centaur living in modern times?
No, we've already talked about this. It was the girl that's going to high school who's a centaur.
Oh, okay. So it is kind of like that.
It is a slice of life then, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember this. Oh, yeah. Okay. Any other shows to bring up while we're in this anime-heavy episode?
I don't have any anime shows that I've watched recently.
Oh, Cells at Work.
Oh, yeah. I also, just because I'm interested in medical science, was like, is this just an educational show for like kids that found its way in, or is it actually pretty good? Are we talking about a Japanese Osmosis Jones reboot?
It's a Japanese Osmosis Jones reboot.
Oh shit. Okay.
About a red blood cell and a white blood cell that happened to get into some shenanigans, I guess. I've only watched the first episode, and I originally thought it was based on its clip art. I was assuming it was a slice of life anime about a manga editor
going crazy. Oh, yeah, because Cells at Work, I get you.
Yeah. And then I started watching it. I was like, oh, red blood cells. Huh. Okay.
These sound intense. They have episodes such as pneumonococcus, scrape wound, cedar pollen allergies, cancer cell, blood or food poisoning, blood circulation. Okay, I will try and watch this as soon as I can. I am interested.
Platelets, they are adorable. They're the little kids.
Okay. Oh man, I could really use a human body personified anime. This is perfect.
I'm sorry, I like that. I like the sound of that. A human body personified.
Yeah, that does sound like a bit of an oxymoron. Okay, cool. Well, that's all I have to do, or that's all I have to talk about anime. If you guys all have right. anything else, go for it.
Video games exist, I think.
Yeah. They started existing at this very minute. So what have you guys been playing?
Before we talk about that, are we going to talk about rays and laser beams this week?
Is that news-related stuff? Or
yeah, it's news-related stuff, so ignore me for right now.
Are we talking about CD drives? What are we talking about?
Oh, you're talking about the RTX.
Yeah, man, the RTX and how many rays it shoots off, because there's a new format of measuring power now.
Oh.
I'm sure the Xbox Z will measure its power in that means as soon as it's announced.
Okay, anyway, video games. I need to uninstall officially Dishonored 2 and reinstall Dishonored 2.
Oh, okay.
So you've maybe found a solution?
That was a roller coaster for a second. I was like,
no.
No,
I did not find a solution, but I'm hoping that uninstalling and reinstalling it will cause it to work, maybe?
I mean, that's how plenty of things work. You hit reset or restart and try again, shut down, jiggle some power cables, turn it back on. That's how I do all my troubleshooting.
Pretty much. No, I literally, before, like, 30 minutes before we were going to podcast today, I double-clicked on Dishonored 2 just to kind of, like, boot it up. I booted it up, got through the load screen, and then it promptly shut my computer down. Just completely shut it down.
That's not cool.
Yeah. So I'm hoping this will fix it.
Yeah, best of luck to you.
Why, thank you.
I think your computer's just upset that you picked Corvo for the campaign as opposed to Emily.
I wish I could pick Corvo for the campaign instead of Emily. I can't even get to the campaign.
Did you play both
yeah, I
paths?
Did. Yep.
Is it like a drastically different game between the two?
You essentially have your characters swapping positions in the campaign. So like ultimately the storylines that you pass through are going to be the same. It's not Fire Emblem Sacred Stones where you split from your sister and like go to an entire opposite end of the continent. But the moves that you have are definitely very different from one another. So as long as you're not playing a mostly flesh and steel run, which is essentially where you play powerless, you will notice a very large change in how you can approach problems in the game. There are a couple of carryovers. Like, I think both types of characters get dark vision or something of the sort, which is sort of like your night vision slash be able to see certain like objects of interest through walls option, and you both have essentially something that works like a blink. Corvo has his like immediate teleport. Emily's is a little different. She doesn't actually teleport. She has like a tendril or an arm that grabs and like yanks her towards things, so her method of movement is very different.
She allows.
Yeah, so yeah, she has that tentacle game, but it also like even in the sense of, you guys played Titanfall at all? Either, mm-hmm. Yeah. So for Titanfall, you know how really advanced players use the grappling hook for momentum when they're moving on maps? Yep. Yeah, you can do that with Emily as well in this game. Corvo's blink does not necessarily... It maintains momentum, but it doesn't generate momentum, while Emily's like shadow grasp or whatever actually can slingshot her. And so you can utilize very different methods of movement for these two characters. Emily also has an ability to like turn into a shadow, while Corvo can only like possess a rat. And she's much more like offensively capable in this way than Corvo is as the rat. And so there is a variety of ways to solve problems with techniques that on their surface seem somewhat similar, but have a large amount of depth and difference. I think that that is one of the few games I know that you can play two or four or even six times, and depending on how you want to approach it, on both the like lethality, non-lethality end, completionist, non-completionist, and then which kind of character you're playing as, totally changes up how you interact with these maps and the gameplay. Like, it is a game that I think truly embodies the idea of replayability. And I think Emily's a lot more fun just because I played Dishonored 1, and Corvo's kit in Dishonored 1 was more or less streamlined. They essentially did some meshing of his powers with the powers they gave Dowd in the Knife of Dunwall and Brigmore Witches DLC for the original Dishonored game to make him a little bit more fun and interesting. But ultimately, Emily has these, like, I guess, higher skill cap and higher complexity-based abilities that I think just make the game a lot more fun and interesting. Plus, her story's more interesting. Corvo's just mad his daughter got frozen. Emily's pissed because she's just been, like, usurped from her throne for the second time. And I don't know. I found it more compelling to play as that character.
So maybe that'll be something that Cookie will get to play shortly or soon.
I hope so. I look
One
forward
day.
To it.
I'm literally trying.
Has there been anything you've been able
scenario,
to play, Cookie?
If I ever find it, if I ever find it discounted enough, I'd be more than happy to buy you a console copy. It won't be as fun as the computer because computer gaming in that medium is always better. But
that's what you think.
PC Master Class Scott.
It plays okay on PlayStation and whatnot.
Yeah, if you ever want to just send me a copy on PlayStation and or just, oh, I guess you can't gift me money. Well, you could just Venmo me.
And yeah,
just buy it on PlayStation. While the girls were here, we ended up buying Overcooked 2 for the PlayStation 4. And so me and Lizzie have kind of been playing that all week, basically.
Is it better than the first?
The ability to throw food is amazing, and it makes things all the better. Story-wise, there's a horde of unbred. So undead bread is needing to be fed instead of a alien from space, I guess, was the first one.
The spaghetti monster.
Yeah, the spaghetti monster from space. Yeah, this time it's unbred, but they've got like secret levels. They have throwing food. Throwing food is amazing. That's all I really care about, just being able to throw food. Because you'd be like, oh, that pan's 15 feet away, but it's already on a burner. Here's this chopped up steak. Bam, there we go. Don't even have to be over there. That's kind of all I've been playing in the video game sense. Did a few more things with Dungeons and Dragons. Still playing Gloomhaven. We got a little bit further in that, and it's getting a lot easier to manage time and things and set up. I was trying to think. Yep. Nope, that's it. Oh, I bought buttons for Alexa as well.
Like dots or?
Nope, buttons.
Buttons.
Yeah, so it's
like a remote?
In the sense that the remote's only one button.
Is it the kind that you use to refill things that you regularly buy from Amazon?
Nope.
Oh. Okay, I don't understand at all what these buttons
it's
are then.
Like, so with Alexa, you can play different kinds of what they call skills, but games. So with these buttons, we now have, I ended up buying 4 buttons because they were on sale. You can, like, play
Jeopardy buzzers?
Yeah, Jeopardy buzzers.
Okay.
You can play Jeopardy. We were playing a bomb defusing game where you had to do buttons in specific orders in order to defuse said bomb. And it got real complex real fast, but working with 4 different people, each one has their own button, and they have to push it at a specific point. It's a lot of fun.
So I was gonna ask, is that the reason why you're remodeling the kitchen? Is you lost at the Alexa bomb game?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's all I've been doing with video games, so not that much.
I tried to play Octopath Traveler, but Sierra made me leave the Switch at home for when we went camping.
It's some bullshit right there. That's what
it is.
That's what
bullshit.
It's for.
That is some bullshit.
Literally what it's for.
Yeah, that's what I said. So I haven't really played much of that. I went to the movies again. I've been on a movie kick. So I went and saw Black Klansman, a Spike Lee joint in which it says a Spike Lee joint twice in the very beginning, and some dumb lady at the very end of the movie asks, did Spike Lee direct this?
Oh, not like within the movie, but someone in the audience was like, was this Spike Lee?
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, okay, first off, if you missed the preview for a re-showing of Do the Right Thing by Spike Lee, and then you missed the two Spike Lee joint intros at the very beginning, and then you watch the whole movie, which is like characteristically Spike Lee, yes. Spike Lee. Yeah. And then you ask at the end, is this a Spike Lee joint? I'm worried that woman did not necessarily absorb everything that the film had to offer.
Do you think maybe Spike Lee needs to take Hideo Kojima classes?
I think he needs to take... I think Spike Lee's got his stuff figured out. He's got his own taste and style. I don't think he needs classes from everybody. That lady needs to take some Spike Lee courses.
I'm just saying, like, you played Metal Gear Solid 5. There are so many Kojima and Koji Pro name drops littered throughout that game. I'm not saying it's bad.
Are you kidding me?
It's
in every episode. The game is built into episodes, and it's like, just so you didn't forget, this is Hideo Kojima. Like,
pretty great.
This game is Hideo Kojima. Solid Snake is just, or Venomous Snake is just a on-screen representation of the mind of Hideo Kojima.
Like, you never forget that you're playing Venomous Snake.
Yeah. Punished Venomous Snake.
Oh, yeah. Punished is in there, too, isn't it?
It's
pretty good.
You know, and all the Norman Reedus Easter eggs, like, it's unavoidable.
So that's all you did this week?
Well, I did play some Nexus Blitz in League once my latency issues were solved by I don't know what. It is a new mode in League of Legends. Neil, you and I... Have we played that, or did we just end up playing ARAMs?
We played a couple, but your ping was so bad that we decided to switch.
My ping was very bad. It has since resolved at least a little bit. Instead of sitting at an average latency over 200 milliseconds, I was getting closer to like 112 to 115, which is very manageable for that game. It's not great. It's certainly not the best, and I don't normally play at that high of a latency with any of the other game modes, but it's enough that I can play that game mode and actually enjoy it. And it is a super super rough alpha of essentially what I like to think is the Mario Party of League of Legends. Random events occur in the middle of a game to kind of fuck up the balance of the standard like laning and jungling actions, and all of the available map is still small enough that you can essentially boil into a team fight within about 30 seconds from any situation on the map. So it is a very hectic, very high octane game of really managing your team and managing the like shifting objectives that occur during gameplay. And I think it's a blast. I love it. It's brought some new like freshness back to the game that I thought was only coming around when we had events like One for All or Earth. I like these more erratic and kind of weird game modes. I think Blizzard really nailed it when they made the arcade modes for Overwatch that, you know, really mix up the game styles. So if you're tired of playing a basic, like, sort of competitive objective mode, you can really deviate from that, but still learn and utilize skills that are available for any other portion of the game.
Yeah, that basically sums it up.
Yeah, it's glitchy. It's glitchy as all hell, too, since it's an alpha. So there's a lot of weird, fun events that end up occurring. It's not balanced in any way. I played with some friends in which one of the like Ring of Fire showdown sudden death match events that happens appeared like behind an enemy turret near the very beginning of the game. So it's like, there's almost no way to win that effectively once it gets to its kind of final point. And there's so much extra stress and pressure placed on one team over another that it's like an assured victory for that team. there are a lot of issues like that, but I normally don't get mad when that makes me lose a game. I just think like, wow, what a wild and wacky time. It's
I'm curious as to see like what will ultimately
what final
come
product
out
will
of
be?
Nexus Blitz, because League of Legends, like the community, the player base as a whole is one that takes everything already way too seriously on the competitive side. And not always pure competition either, because you also have people that like would rather lose a game if they're not the one winning the game for their team too.
Oh yeah.
But like, we're definitely not going to necessarily see the same level of RNG that we're currently experiencing, because like you're
people
right,
hate it.
There are literally events that happen or mini games that happen within Nexus Blitz that completely throw the momentum from one side to the other.
Yeah, absolutely. Or they just like unfairly punish a side that is already just like hanging in there but not at the advantage, and it's like the nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
That's what happened with that game. Like I think we were about even on the kill scores, and our objectives were still like there were no really big objectives completed, and that one event that pretty much made the other team get a team kill on us and a like bonus reward essentially allowed them to snowball on us immensely hard after that single event played out.
I think they have something even just by the map design, because like the League of Legends map, which is what boils down to three towers per three lanes, is greatly reduced down to basically two lanes, a jungle, and like a combination of I think four or five towers total, as opposed to nine.
And
or
there are
11,
there are
I guess
sort of jungle towers essentially that I'm really interested in seeing. Like, I'm wondering, I haven't seen a game yet in which those jungle towers have really gone down, but let's say you get the Guardian Angel reward. Like, do you just bum rush that top tower with your whole team so you can sneak in to damage their Nexus later?
Yeah, I'm curious about it too. There definitely seems like there's a lot of hidden potential in this game
that could be unlocked with more time. Open avenues for more creative gameplay. But that's it. That's all I've got for the gaming end. Like, I didn't get to touch much else.
So I got to play a little bit, and I'll probably be starting on my own save here shortly, of God of War. And I watched Tiffany play the majority of this game, so I already know the story beats and stuff. And actually, there is a level of storytelling in this God of War that I think like they've never really been able to do in the original five God of Wars. And maybe this is like me kind of just, I don't know. It's hard for me to explain exactly how I feel or why I feel the storytelling in this current God of War, which is just God of War, not God of War 5, 6, or whatever, is just so much more superior than the other games. But like, I feel they've done a really good job with this particular God of War. Like, after witnessing the story from start to finish, it's a captivating, kind of predictable story, but only predictable if you actually know your Norse mythology. And I would say it's like, not coming from that standpoint, but Tiffany knows quite a bit about Norse mythology. I think she studied it in high school or something, or had to have. But it seems like if you know the mythology and you play the game, you start to predict what is happening and what's going on. And when you're right, you feel amazing. Like, it's one of those cases where predicting the plot twists and the story
feels
beats.
Good.
It actually enhances the experience, which they do a good job. And they do a good job, I think, respecting the mythos to a degree. There's obviously a level of like, of bastardization of the story, but like, it
right,
never
because
feels...
you have to have Kratos come in there and fuck shit up for... You know, like
yeah,
the
I mean,
theme of God
but like,
of War.
The degree of bastardizing mythology that I felt the original God of Wars did by having Kratos, this dude, kind of come out of nowhere, I think they do a much more elegant job with Norse mythology, especially with the big picture. Like, without getting into spoilers, I think they made it, they did literally a near perfect job fitting this character into Norse mythology. And that's all I'll say there.
Okay.
And it also makes me really excited to see what they have in store for a sequel, should there be one. I mean, you have to assume, because it's done really well in numbers. But I did get to play some, and I played like against one of the hardest bosses in the game, which, as a first time playing God of War, is maybe not the best way to do it. But like, I understand why people, like why Keith and John in particular, were saying that this is the best game of 2018 so far. There's a level of Dark Souls in it that, like, if you honestly just change the camera angle, pulled it back a little bit, and centered Kratos in the center of the screen, it would be Dark Souls with special abilities.
But it's such an easy pitch to get me to play a game. I feel terrible about it. I feel like a sucker. I feel like you can say, so it's pretty close to Dark Souls, and I've already got the wallet out, and I'm like, yeah, and how much does it cost?
It might be on sale right now.
I'll have to check it out. I mean,
you should check out, you know, some gameplay videos first.
I have a basic idea of the God of War series, because I did play God of War 2, and I relatively enjoyed that game. It kind of struck me at the perfect timing for my gaming to finally play like a somewhat competent beat 'em up. So I don't know. I feel like it is a game I could go out on a branch for, though I'd like to pick up a game that is more relevant to the podcast.
Maybe say that God of War 2, like original God of Wars, are more character action games, and this game feels more methodical than that.
Yeah, which I like. I definitely prefer. So,
and like, so yeah, I haven't been playing too much, too many games. Like my work production, or my work as a whole, started to pick back up. You know, it's the season. But another game I watched Tiff start is called Blue Reflection, and I only wanted to bring it up because it was so interesting to me that, like, I don't know necessarily how I feel about the game or how I would ever feel about recommending the game, but it kind of feels like they took the Persona idea, like the whole mechanic of like building relationships between characters and setting it on like a daily structure, and then like just the framework of that, and then decided to take a magical anime girl or a magical girl anime and put that into the framework of it. There's like and in addition to that, really stark contrast between like the things they do well and the things that got glossed over because it seems like a pretty low budget game. Like the character models look pretty fantastic, and at the same time, like the use of animations within cutscenes and like the overall direction and storytelling feels like it really takes a backseat. It's like one of those circumstances where if the development team had like another year to work on general basic functionality of the game engine, it probably would have benefited a bunch. But I don't know. I am curious enough that I'm going to try, and I'm going to probably play it if Tiffany doesn't continue it, even though it's like way out of my wheelhouse. And I think the combat's kind of crummy, but I'm super curious to see what this game could be. And it's worth a mention, but I'm getting down to the end game of Octopath Traveler. I think it may be a little premature for me to say, but at this point, it's looking like it's going to be my favorite game of 2018. And it definitely has the best soundtrack of 2018 so far. Like, I don't think there's a track I dislike in that game. But that about does it for me.
That about does it for the timing for the podcast, too.
Yeah.
Though, to piggyback, like, Octopath Traveler truly does have a soundtrack that I think is going to be a real sleeper hit. Like, it's very good, and I feel like there's a level of timelessness to it that some other Final Fantasy tracks have that I'll probably be coming back to listening to soundtracks or like OSTs for it while doing moderate activities that require kind of like zoning out on to those types of soundtracks.
So I saw the end credits of Octopath Traveler already, I guess, like, which, oh, okay, I am going to say this much.
Is there 8 end credits, so to speak?
I think there's only one, and I think it's based upon when you complete chapter 4 for your protagonist. So I would maybe recommend doing that as your last quest for a reason that we'll talk about later. I don't think there's anything actually that wrong about doing, you know, the quests in the order you want to do. And actually, this is not a spoiler. It's kind of a gameplay spoiler. I don't think it's harmful for you to know.
That's fine.
When you finish your character's final chapter, your quote unquote protagonist, you then have the ability to swap out that character, which that's actually what fueled me to do it, because it's like I have this guy that's 20 levels ahead of everyone else. And as a result, I'm just like plowing through every single boss fight. It's just like, well, I guess I'm going to kill him with this ability. All right. So I did it so I could swap in a completely fresh set of 4 characters that were all a lower level and make the rest of the game a little more challenging.
You can get your 20 level under Ulbrich finally into the lineup.
Yeah. But so you get the game credits when you beat the game, or quote unquote beat the last chapter for your protagonist. And during that credit run, you get you kind of get the ending track, if you will, that it has a bunch of the game's themes with different arrangements. And that was like the nail in the coffin for me, of just like, oh God, this is such a great arrangement for this theme. And oh, awesome, they actually take this theme and make it more cinematic. They do a lot of things that you really can't do with looping music. And it was perfect. I kind of got the feels that you get when you play Undertale. Like, you get not to the same emotional level.
Tears?
No, not that, but just like the revisit, or the reference back to older themes and older songs that you may not have heard in a while.
Yeah.
Especially like the Octopath Traveler main theme itself shows up there in a few different arrangements, and it's really effective because it's something that you hear whenever you start the game, so you're constantly reminded of what it is, but you don't actually hear or listen to the whole track. And when that portion plays during the ending, it's very effective at setting, like, kind of like finalizing your experience of the game, despite the fact that I still need to play 7 other chapter 4s and the quote-unquote secret content that follows. So
yeah, that is, I think that's the killer approach, right? Like, Undertale is a great example of it. I think almost every Legend of Zelda game normally has a rearrangement or a return to like a main theme of the game. It is a great way to seal kind of the narrative and the experience for the player. To
that moment in Breath of the Wild when you're back in the castle and it's playing like a kind of darker version of the Hyrule Field theme is like the most epic. Well, one of like the biggest moments for me, especially because I never went to the castle until way late into the game.
Yeah.
Oh man, that fucking game's so good. I can't get enough Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. Well, cool. Any closing thoughts?
Nah, but if you listeners have anything that you'd like to say, you can reach us at podcast@fancyramen.com.
Don't hesitate to leave likes and comments on the Apple Podcasts.
And please tell a friend about our podcast. We'd love to increase our listener count. And the easiest way to do that is for you to do some of the legwork and share your favorite episodes or just our podcast name in general. Thanks.
Oh, and I guess I should also add, keep an eye out on the Fancy Ramen Twitch channel, and are the Cookie Skimilk Twitch channel, whichever one you want to watch. I am just randomly playing the most random games, whatever.
Yeah, we've been starting to stream a little more with Keith, John, and Buck. You'll find in the notes here the release notes to some of these channels. We should start doing that. But every once in a while, you'll catch Buck playing things like We Happy Few. We played Catherine and a few other games last week. We played Illbleed, which is like the strangest fucking game I've ever played on the Dreamcast. So more shit will be happening there. And once I get better internet, I'll be streaming some random gems I find as well.
All right. It's been a pleasure recording with you guys.
Bye.
Peace.
Bye.